like to do is share with you some reflections that I have regarding the parable that has been assigned to me, which is known as the parable of the soils, the parable of the sower, the parable of the seeds, the parable of the hearers, depending upon how you title it. We'll get to that in a little bit. And what I'd like to share with you is actually the most important lessons that I have learned in over 3 decades of teaching. I've been doing this for a long time. And the parable of the seeds, or the parable of the soils, the sower, this particular talk, I think summarizes and culminates in some of the most important lessons that I've learned that I'd like to share with you. So I'm going to get a little vulnerable and share deep from my heart from many, many, many years of this. And it starts with the phrase, I love soccer. Soccer is one of my favorite sports. I used to play it as a kid. I would go out in the field all by myself. I was the MVP, the most valuable offensive player my senior year of high school. I'm super proud of that. This is a flat. Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Let's close in prayer. That's all I needed. I just needed some affirmation of my high school achievements. And soccer was a passion, a love. And part of the teaching that I would do around telling kids that I loved soccer is that, number one, it would allow me to connect with them because, right, everybody has a sport that they love or at least has a identified love that they have. And then you could talk a little bit about various types of love, such as agape love or phileo love or storge love or eros love. And you can guess which one, that might be pushing a little too far. So you can guess which one that might be for soccer. So I used to teach a lot like that and use props like that. In addition to loving soccer, I also love money. Yeah. Thank you, Marcus. Probably should have been a little bit more specific that I love paper money. Paper money. There are 10 of those somewhere, so afterwards, if you would like to come help clean those up, I would greatly appreciate it so we don't leave any trash around. That love of money, of course, is a principal issue in the biblical scriptures and Jesus' teachings, and just by throwing money at me, you know, it's kind of like everybody's dream come true, like money. I wish money grew on trees. I wish people would just throw money at me. I would also use money as a wonderful object lesson. This penny, right? How much is it actually worth? And what can I actually see? And let's say that there's all of you that are supposed to be of great value to me, yet this is also valuable, but here's the great object lesson. Here's the parable in the money. Ready? Are you ready for this? This is brilliant youth ministry 101 that you would learn. I have a bachelor's degree in this. Okay, so the further out the money, the more that I can see other value. But the closer and closer the money gets, the smaller and smaller all of you until the only thing that I focus on and can see is the money. Do you see how money can be? Isn't that a great illustration? Yes? Brilliant? Thank you for patronizing me. I appreciate it. Parables come in all sorts of shapes and sizes, and they are designed to teach, to illustrate, to imbue an idea, a concept, a deep truth to people using means that are perhaps a little bit different or parallel with the core concept and idea. When I first became a Christian and opened up this book, do you know what I saw? Do you know what I saw in this book? Right. Nothing. Because when I first became a Christian, when I first started reading and understanding a text that told the story of Jesus, I had no clue. I had no understanding. I had no passion. I had no training. But by participating in a group, by participating in church, and this is the great lesson, here's the great parable, by participating in that, oh, my eyes all of a sudden were opened. And I was able to see now, oh, there's some brilliant stories in here. Yes, I love these stories. Aren't these fantastic stories? And I got to start to see myself in these stories. But wait, there's more. This is now youth ministry 201, people. To really understand the depths of the brilliance of these stories, you need to have a personal relationship with Jesus in which you have surrendered your heart and your soul, where you are in intimate relationship with your beloved, the creator, the one who made you. And then, and only then, can you open the scriptures and see fully and completely what these stories are in full and living color. I had a ton of these. And these are all parables. These are all my old illustrations. Like this newspaper was one of my newspaper. This is a thing called paper. It used to exist. This thing cost me $3. Yeah, wow is right. That's what I thought. But picture this paper being your life. And all of a sudden, the sins of the world, the trials and tribulations of this world. I hope this works. The trials and tribulations of this world come and start to do this. I used to tell my testimony using this newspaper, talking about how my parents got divorced when I was an early age and I felt like my life was doing this. I talked about me being made fun of as a minority in a primarily white population. I talked about poverty and all sorts of difficult challenges that I had growing up. And I would talk about my life in this particular way of how this is what sometimes our life feels like. And sometimes when you're, especially in high school and junior high, and you're living life in this particular way, this is what you feel like your life is like. But then, of course, and here's the lesson. Ready? 301, okay? Youth ministry. Because then, if this is your life, and honestly, to some degree, these stories that I would tell, these illustrations, these parables that I would give, were actually pretty meaningful to me. If you then recognize that in my life, my family was broken, but there was a family that was found in God. In my life, I dealt with poverty, but there was a wealth of riches to be had in the teachings of Jesus. And once you begin to understand and realize that that is your new life, then and only then can your life be put back together again. I haven't done that in 20 years. The reason why I go through all that, number one, gives you a little bit of an insight into my kind of pedagogical history. I would use these stories, these illustrations, these silly things frequently on a regular basis to try to captivate my audience's attention. And I tell you, I wanted to be a really, really, really good teacher. I studied everything that I could. I had graphs and I memorized my talks word for word. I wrote them out, practiced them, literally stood in the mirror wanting to articulate and watch my facial expressions, my body language, and all of that. Why? Because part of what I was going for, part of the thing that I wanted to do was to really be an effective teacher and connect that with faith and with Jesus and with the church. I wanted to be an effective teacher because lives were at stake. Salvation was at stake. The state of the youth was at stake. Everything was weighty and important. And there are some lessons that I've learned along the way that I'd like to share with you. And some of what those lessons are actually encapsulated in these things that we call parables. Because parables are supposed to be teachers. And so if you can pay attention to what the parables are, you can pay attention to the techniques that Jesus is using to teach. But this particular parable, the parable of the sower, is actually a parable about the parables. It is a teaching on how you actually teach, which is a little bit of why I go through all of this. I've had an incredible privilege, and yes, I've done that soccer ball gig, stunt more than once, so you're welcome. And what I'd like to do is share with you some reflections on the parable, which is called actually the parable of the sower, to bring out of what I think Jesus is doing here, to demonstrate you can share the parables all you want. You can learn the lessons, principles, ideas, concepts, but if you don't understand the parable about the parables, you might be missing a really critical piece of what it means to be a communicator, what it means to be a teacher, what it means to be a disciple, what it means to be an evangelist, what it means to care for the next generation, all of those things. So that's where we're going. Mark chapter 4, there's multiple passages in Matthew as well as in Luke. We're just going to talk about Mark chapter 4 because the study of the parallels between the three, are that's for a different time. Again, he began to teach beside the sea. Such a very large crowd gathered around him that he got into a boat on the sea and sat there. While the whole crowd was beside the sea on the land, he began to teach them many things in parables. And in his teaching, he said to them, "Listen, a sower went out to sow." Now, I want to pause there for a second. That word "listen" there is the word "hear." But every now and then, I don't know why these Bible translators do what they do sometimes. Look at what the actual Greek is. There are two words there that they have condensed into one. Listen and see. Listen, see, look, understand. So it's not just hearing. There's a second level there of really understand. Pay attention to what's going on here. Don't just hear. So we're going to put that in there, even though it's not in your translation. Listen, see, understand. And then he launches into the parable. A sower went out to sow, and as he sowed, some seed fell on a path, and the birds came and ate it up. Other seed fell on rocky ground where it did not have much soil, and it sprang up quickly since it had no depth of soil. And when the sun rose, it was scorched, and since it had no root, it withered away. Other seed fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked it, and it yielded no grain. Other seed fell into good soil and brought forth grain, growing up and increasing and yielding 30 and 60 and 100 fold. If you have ears to hear, then hear. Listen, understand. Got it? Well, maybe. When he was alone, those who were around him, along with the 12, asked him about the parable. Because, can you explain this to me? Which is a frequent thing. By the way, if you're new or trying to figure out this Jesus thing and you have no clue, join the club. There's a lot of people that just have no clue. To you has been given the secret of the kingdom of God, but for those outside, everything comes in parables. Now, I'm going to pause there for a second. That word secret sounds like this thing that's hidden away. The actual word mysterion just simply means a mystery. It's kind of like this is wild and perplexing. How does that work? So it's not like God is trying to hide something. It's not as if it's like hidden away. Sorry, secret, you're not in the club. It is the perplexity of, wait, this is how it really works? This is how it happens? For those on the outside, everything comes in parables in order that they may indeed look but not perceive, and that they may indeed hear but not understand, so that they may not turn again and be forgiven. That's a quote from Isaiah. I had thought about spending a lot of time in Isaiah, but we're going to go in a little bit of a different direction. If you want to explore what this passage means in light of ancient Israel, that's a whole other talk. So we're just going to, I apologize, we're going to skim over that piece and move to something different. And he said to them, "Do you not understand this parable? Then how will you understand all the parables? The sower sows the word. These are the ones on the path where the word is sown. When they hear, Satan immediately comes and takes away the word that is sown in them. And these are the ones sown on rocky ground. When they hear the word, they immediately receive it with joy, but they have no root and endure only for a while. Then when trouble or persecution arises on account of the word, immediately they fall away. And these are the ones sown on rocky ground. When they hear the word, they immediately receive it with joy, but they have no root and endure only for a while. Then when trouble or persecution arises on account of the word, immediately they fall away." That word "fall away" sometimes has this connotation of, you know, dismissing your faith or kind of, you know, converting away. It just simply means to stumble, difficulty, challenge, you know, like you tripped over. "And others are those sown among the thorns. These are the ones who hear the word, but the cares of the age and the lure of wealth and the desire for other things comes in and choke the word, and it yields nothing. And these are the ones sown on the good soil. They hear the word and accept it and bear fruit 30 and 60 and 100 fold." One of the things that's really fascinating about these tricks here is that I started to realize that I would do the money, the ball, newspaper, magic tricks, and all these kinds of things. And what was interesting to me is that after I gave those talks, shared those brilliant teachings, using them intended to be a way of communicating God's word, principle, deep truths, guess what the students asked me about afterward? "How did you do that? Can't you show me?" Right. They wanted to know about that thing right there. The trick. the magic. The illustration was far more enticing, far more attractive, far more attention-drawing than the actual principle. And what I was attempting to do is to sow something really good in the students using a prop, magic trick, but it just wasn't. I mean, this is one of the things that I learned. I mean, I'm sure some of you in here are probably like, how the heck did he do that thing? Can I look at that newspaper afterwards? Like, what's that all about? How is that? No, that book, wait, how did the book, there's, and then I, right? So this story of the parable helps to illuminate something deep about the success of conveying truths, concepts, ideas, the success of teaching. And what Jesus does here, by the way, in the, I believe, the only parable in the entire corpus that we have, he actually explains what the parable is and what they are. So if there's any ambiguity, there should be none. Very, very rarely at Spark do we say it's clear. It's clear what these things are. The seed, what are they? It's the word. It's the word of God. It's the word that goes forth. And of course, that word there is the word logos. If you want to dive deep into that word, we did a teaching about that a little while ago. That word, the seed, the word, gets thrown onto the paths, and one of them lands, or some of them land, on the rocky soil. What is the rocky soil? We have no question here. It's that soil that doesn't go down very deep, can't take root, and when troubles, here's the thing, persecution, or worldly things pop up, it doesn't allow it to thrive because of these challenging things. There's no root. It can't take root. There are some that fall along the path and are eaten by the birds. And of course, what does that symbolize? When the seed is sown along the path, somebody who has pathy soil in their heart goes for it. They receive it with joy, but Satan comes and takes it away. Yes? Did you notice that? Yes. He did call the birds Satan. So Satan comes and takes away the seed, takes away the word. And then, of course, the thorns. These are the tricky ones. The word grows up, it germinates, it grows. But then there are all these other things. The cares of the world, the attractiveness of this, the lure of wealth, the seduction of other things comes and takes it, chokes it out. It cannot thrive. But it's the idea that there are other things that are coming in and can't allow that to grow. And then, of course, what is the good soil? The good soil is the person in whom those teachings take root, grow, germinate, and here's the key thing, thrive to such a degree that it creates fruit 30, 60, and 100 times, even though it was that one seed. And here's the agrarian principle, the agrarian metaphor and symbol, that one seed can yield 30, 60, 100, and multiple years over, many, many times over. And so the parable of the soils and the parable of the seeds, the parable of the sower here, is actually pretty simple. It's kind of a question of what kind of soil, what kind of path, what kind of heart or person are you when the seed is sown in you? And I will tell you, I had to fight very, very hard against the temptation of trying to categorize various social media apps in these particular categories, because the troubles of the world, the seduction of the cares of the world, and then, of course, the pure evil and the devil comes and takes it away. But I'll refrain. But that's just something that I'm tempted to do. So in many ways, this is a very simple, straightforward kind of thing. What soil are you? Which one are you? For those of you who've attended church, participated in any discipleship, done some Bible studies, tried to follow Jesus, learned and grown, what kind of soil are you? What kind of soil is in your heart and in your soul? So when a teaching like this, or a sermon, or a Bible study, or a message, or a video, or whatever it is that you are engaging in, does it take root and germinate and create multiple times its fruit? Does it get, actually, you know what, that was nice, but you know, I'm really really excited about these other things that are more important to me, the lusts of the world, the cares of the world, the kind of seduction of other things that are more attractive and more exciting, very much like magic tricks, or worries, concerns, problems. Like, I can't understand how good things can actually happen in this world. Like, where, or is it that there's just, it doesn't take root at all, and it's like, okay, I'm here, but Satan comes and takes it away, right? So this is the question. Very simple. Which soil are you? This is actually a common theme found throughout spiritual teachings. There's this ancient text, Perkei Avot, somewhere around 150 to 200 years after Jesus. They actually do something very similar to this, and you'll find this in a lot of Jewish contexts. Here's the teaching. There are four types among that sit in the presence of the sages: the sponge, the funnel, the strainer, and the sifter. The sponge soaks up everything. The funnel, which takes in at this end and lets out the other. That's my favorite. In this and out the other? Are you getting a little potty humor in there is what I'm thinking right there. The strainer, which lets out the wine and collects the sediment. The sifter, which extracts the coarsely ground flour and collects the fine flour. And they use this particular idea to talk about a very similar thing. That the teaching that comes is really kind of all dependent upon what kind of soil are you. So if that happens to be the case, and we're just going to stipulate that it is, you can use this to talk about a variety of different principles, ideas, perspectives. For example, have you ever wondered why it is that some people just simply cannot understand the brilliance, the truth, the seduction, the wonderfulness of God's love, the teachings, etc.? Have you ever wondered that? Why is it that some people adhere and other people just simply don't? So, the soils helps to explain that, helps to put it into a framework. It's not the teaching, it's the soils. There's another way of thinking about it. If Jesus is the Word, then the seed that is being sown is actually Jesus. And maybe Jesus has come into this world, but there are certain groups, certain communities, certain contexts in which Jesus just simply cannot take root. The cares of the world. We've talked a little bit about Pharisees and Sadducees and Essenes and Zealots and Herodians, all sorts of different groups of people in the first century context. And there are some people that just really adhered to Jesus and other people that just completely rejected. So maybe you could think about this parable very similar to, why is it that some people accept Jesus and others don't? Why do some people really adhere to Jesus' teachings and others simply don't? Isaiah refers to the people of Israel. This is a little hint as to what's going on in the Isaiah passage. So maybe the people of Israel are actually the seed, and what Mark is doing is talking about the word and the people of Israel in conjunction. There's all sorts of fun things that are going on there. It also helps us to understand that maybe there's another flip side to this, that the hardness of heart, the worries, the cares of the world, by simply explicating that those are the issues, maybe it actually gives the person, the hearer, agency. That is what is happening. That is what's going on in my heart. So maybe I have agency now to change it, which is a lot of what most people teach about. A key principle, of course, in this passage is the idea of hearing. Hearing is understanding and then also obeying. And I thought about this word. This is kind of a footnote and freebie for you. We use the word adhering to talk about adhering to a teaching, to follow along, to obey, to connect with it. We could also perhaps amend that to adhering, just for fun. So that is one possible way of thinking about the parable. What kind of soil are you? And does that help to explain why some teachings hit, some teachings don't? I'm going to do the other side, however, because if you listen to this carefully, do you not understand this parable? How will you then understand all the parables? The parables that Jesus is teaching to his disciples to then send out into the world. And then Matthew actually calls this out specifically and says, hear then the parable of the sower. This is not the parable of the soils. This is the parable of the sower. It's not about what kind of soil you are. It's about what kind of sower the sower is. So there's something very strange going on in the way in which they present this, in which the gospel writers are presenting this. So while it is true, and I'm going to suggest the beauty of the biblical text that we've talked about for many, many years, is that it's probably both. This is principally a key element of what the parable is about. What kind of soil are you? Explore what kind of soil is in your heart. How do you receive it? Are the cares of this world or the attractions and lusts of other things choking out the word of God? That is part of the lesson. But there's another piece of this, which is it's also about the sower. And it's also about the person who actually goes out and does the teaching. It's about that young kid in Bible college who wanted to go out and teach and grabbed every single magic trick he could, every single technique that he could, everything that he could get his hands on to try to become the most effective teacher, including asking Sparkers to throw things at him in a message. Maybe this is also a story about what kind of teacher we could be. And I'd like to explore just a couple ideas, and I'm kind of very much like the seed being scattered out, and I'm going to throw a bunch of things at you. Because these are some things that I've learned about teaching over the years that I would like to offer to you that I think are found in this particular passage that can be explored and extrapolated. 25% good is 100% successful. Bad soils, negativity bias. The paradox of yield. The audience is always sovereign from bad soils to tilling the soils. So let's start with 25% is good. 25% good is 100% successful. Did anybody notice that this sower is really bad at his job? Like, what the heck? Aren't you supposed to care about every single seed? I mean, like, especially in a very tight economy, don't waste the seed, buddy. Don't just indiscriminately throw it all over the place. And I realize that there's not a mathematical calculation, but there are four things there, and three of them are bad, so let's just use 25 and 75% just for the purposes of illustrations. He is 25% effective at his job. How many of you, being 25% effective at your job, are going to have the job the next day? He's horrible. But the agrarian analogy of this, of course, doesn't fit to mathematical calculations. Because even though this farmer, this sower, is only 25% successful, that 25% yields what? 30, 60, and 100 times. And let me tell you, the number of times I felt like I was speaking to a deaf audience. I hope that's not happening right now. No? Okay, just checking, because it might be. And by the way, if you are tired, close your eyes, put your head down, take a nap. You'll feel much better. The number of times that I felt like students just weren't getting it, didn't hear me, I was being ineffective, etc., made me realize, listen, the job of the sower is to sow. And there might be moments of indiscriminate sowing, and sometimes, especially in public ministry, or especially sometimes even in one-on-one in groups, in all the various situations that you are in, you have no idea what kind of soil you are sowing into. You don't know, because you can't read people's hearts, you can't discern, but what you can do is take this parable and say, some of it's going to fall on rocky soil, some of it's going to fall on the path, some of it's going to fall among the thorns, but some of it is going to land in good soil. And I don't want to take the time, but I feel incredibly privileged and blessed that I get sometimes feedback from students in the past, sometimes even from Sparkers, about how a teaching really got planted, germinated, made a difference in somebody's life. And that moment is a vector of additional influence where that person goes and influences another, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. 25% good is 100% successful. According to this, it's very similar to Seneca, who somewhere around 64 AD, so somewhat of a contemporary of Jesus, a couple years after, wrote in the Moral Letters, words should be scattered like seed, no matter how small the seed may be. If it has once found favorable ground, it unfolds its strength, and from an insignificant thing spreads to its greatest growth. Precepts and seeds have the same quality. They produce much, and yet they are slight things. If this is a parable of the sower, my friends, sow away. And you will feel sometimes insecure, uncertain, feeling like you're a failure. You're going to feel like you're going to blame the people for not listening and paying attention to you. It's clearly the soils. They're the problem. It's also going to influence our negativity bias, the idea that we are drawn to the negative far more than we are drawn to the positive. So when we hear those bad stories, it's like, oh yeah, I was, you know the story, right? You hear 8 wonderful, brilliant, positive compliments about your life, and you hear 1 negative comment. What do you focus on? The one. It's the negativity bias. But in the midst of that, you have to realize the parable of the sower. 25% good is actually 100% successful. So let's go then. The audience is always sovereign, which is one of the principles. Somebody shared this with me many, many, many years ago. No matter how good you are as a teacher, communication must be mutually agreed upon. And the audience is always sovereign. You do your best to try to reach those people who are in mutual agreement with you. If you show up to church, generally speaking, there's an unwritten, understood agreement that we are in mutual agreement. The person up here is going to do their best to share and articulate wisdom, truth, insight, to prepare it well, to communicate it well. You are going to do your best to attend to it well and consider it carefully for your life. But the reality is that the audience is always sovereign in that particular sense. And then one of the other principles that I've learned is that it is very, very tempting to want to blame, to talk about how, oh yeah, these people, these are crazy people, or these people just couldn't listen or whatever, and to use various pedagogical teaching communication techniques that are really inefficient or ineffective to try to jam knowledge, wisdom, insight into people. But if this parable of the sower is connected with this parable of the soils, if that is the truth, then if you're going to try to encourage people to hear so that the seed, the word, the teaching can be planted well, maybe instead of talking about how bad the soils are, maybe we start asking ourselves the question, how can we begin to till the soil in our teaching itself? And this is what I see Jesus actually doing frequently. And rather than these kinds of pedagogical techniques, this is where things like empathy and love and inspiration and wonder and mystery can draw people in and can begin to break open the toughness of the hardness of the soil, where your empathy, your love, your connection with people, the inspiration of your life, all of these kinds of things can actually begin to till the story, into which then stories and then magic and then illustrations and all these kinds of things can begin to make their root in somebody's life. It is the classic, really important psychological technique, if you want to call it, but posture and position. You want to shift from what is wrong with you to how can I help? It's a shift from punishing the bad soil to tilling the soil. It's a shift to recognizing if it is true that there are some people with various soil hearts, then the principle that I want to begin to apply is not to just simply pound more seed into the rocky soil so that, come on, take root. What is wrong with you? But maybe use other kinds of means and ways to listen carefully to where that person is, where the community is, where that audience is. Empathy. In the work that I do, we talk about trauma-informed care. We talk about moving people towards health and healing with autonomy. We talk about these kinds of things rather than just telling people what you're doing is wrong, please stop it. So the sower parable for me has imbued within it all of the lessons that I think I have picked up along the way, and I see almost every single one of them in this story. The desire to cast the word of God, to teach, to share brilliance and wisdom and insight, to articulate it well, but to recognize that there is this dynamic always, every time, between soil and sower. And so here's my summation of what I think is going on here. And again, like the seeds, I've just kind of thrown out a whole bunch of things for you to consider. And we'll see in your heart and your mind, which one really takes? What makes sense? What can be helpful? What can be useful? Number one, the spreading or the sowing of the kingdom of God requires both thoughtful sowers and good soils. And what I've heard multiple times on teachings like this is how you as a person simply need to transform. You need to become a better person. How can you become a good soil? Well, sure, there's that principle. But if you notice, nowhere in this parable, nowhere does it tell you how to become a good soil. It is conspicuously absent from this parable. It doesn't tell you how to become a good soil. It recognizes that there are. And so that creates a very different dynamic. You can't just teach this parable to say, you now need to become a good soil. Well, sure, you can, but it's also this wonderfully beautiful, dynamic, nuanced relationship between the teacher and the receiver. And that is exactly what's happening with Jesus and the disciples. If you look carefully at the relationship between Jesus and the disciples, you'll see this over and over and over again. The caring, Peter's sinking into the water, you know, after he just walked on water. He's like, yeah, that's amazing. No, you fell in the water. He's a sinner. That's the thing we want to focus on. No, he walked on water. He actually did it. And then, of course, Jesus picks him up. You have little faith. You know, why did you doubt? Why did you doubt yourself? Why? And in those moments, so you'll see these moments, this relationship between the teacher, the sower, and the recipient, the student, the soil. If you are ever asking yourself the question, are you actually making a difference? We've been talking a lot about justice. We just had Dr. Jamar Tisby here to talk about the spirit of justice. The book club is currently going through the Spirit of Justice book about, and the question that comes up on a regular basis is like, are we actually making a difference? I mean, how long, which is part of the prophetic word, how long, O Lord, must we keep doing this? Are we actually making the, well, the parable of the sower recognizes that you cannot forget the paradox of the yield. One seed yields 30, 60, 100 times. Because 99% of your seeds could be lost to the birds, to the devil, to the rocky soil, to the thorns, to the path. But that one seed germinates. Hold on to the paradox of the yield. For those of you who are really like to argue and defend the truth of Christianity against all of the other falsehoods in the world, and I just looked up Bible Thumper. This is what came up. But I must defend the truth. How dare you argue with the truth of God? And we get into these what's known as apologetic arguments. Well, the parable of the sower might suggest to us that instead of arguing the factuality or the truthfulness of the scriptures, sometimes we need to learn how to till the soil. We need to learn how to be in right and wonderful relationship with the people. And then have you ever asked this question, especially in justice works, especially in our currently polarized political, cultural place that we're in? How in the world can those people believe? Oh, come on. Listen. I'm not on social media, but I get told about what you write on social media. So. I just outed somebody. Never mind. Okay, moving on. Have you ever asked that question? What? They just don't understand. How in the world could they think that? How in the world could they believe that? I just don't understand. Multiple times I've heard this in our recent season. Well, the parable of the sower and the parable of the soils might actually lead us to ask a different question. Start paying attention to the thorns, the rocks, and the birds. We keep focusing on them, then maybe we need to start focusing on cares, worries, concerns, seductions, pressures, all sorts of other things that create the conditions that help somebody posture themselves in the way that they do. Last, if you've ever considered, how do I become more faithful? How do I grow in my faith? Which is something that Sparkers have attended to. I want to grow. I want to become closer to Jesus. I want to deepen my discipleship, etc. Well, doing all of the things might be good, and they are. Bible studies, attendance, community, small group, etc., worship, all of those things, very good. But if we are not tilling your heart, then those things don't grow. So yes, while it's important to do all of the work, pay attention to what is actually here. So, my friends, or maybe I should pick something. Okay. I've done my job. Oh, okay, Arian. Here you go, Arian. So, my friends, those who have ears, let them hear. This is the parable of the parables. As we continue on and explore all those parables, there might come a moment when you say, I don't get it. I totally understandable. Some of these parables are weird. Some of them are a little perplexing. Some of them are ambiguous enough where you go, does it mean this? Yes. Does it mean that? Yes. But that doesn't mean that? Yes. It means all those things. What's most important that we're learning here about the parable of all the parables is that there's this wonderful, brilliant, beautiful, mysterious dynamic that exists between the sower and the soils. And you get to explore that dynamic relationship for the rest of your life. First, as a teacher, for those of you who have kids, for those of you who are teachers, and we have amazing teachers in this community, you get to explore, what is my role, responsibility as a teacher when I'm facing all sorts of different kinds of soils? Can I also start to pay attention to the thorns and the path and the seductions and the problems and the challenges? Paying attention and empathizing to the circumstances and situations of the students with whom I'm teaching. And then for those of you who want to grow, who want to learn, and you also now need to wrestle, when I am taught, what am I hearing? Where is it going? How is it sitting? Where is it taking root? Is it taking root? Or am I more interested, seduced, worried, challenged by these other things? You can draw from this the things you should do. You could also draw from this an observation. This is how things are. And then you get to ask yourself the question, what next? Because there's actually not much in this parable that says this is what you should do. It is an observation of what is. And part of, I think, what Jesus' brilliance is by simply illuminating what is. Something breaks in our hearts. I see that. I understand that. That makes sense to me. And then something begins to soften. And we can begin to grow. As we turn to our time of communion, this is the exact same thing. Every week when we take communion, the elements have been the same. The process, the liturgy has been the same. What is different? Who's taking it? What heart posture? And if that is the case, part of what we can learn is imagine how these liturgies, these practices, these teachings could take root and transform who you are, how you live, how you understand the world, how you understand life, all of those things. How could this be transformative again if you thought about your own heart and your own soil? For in the night in which he was betrayed, our Lord Jesus took the bread, blessed and broke it, giving it to his disciples, saying, take, eat, this is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. Likewise, after supper, he took the cup, gave thanks, and gave it to them, saying, drink this, all of you. This is my blood of the new covenant, which is shed for you and for many for the forgiveness of sins. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me. My dear friends, every single one of you are welcome at this table. Please come and eat and drink as we sing.